Chapter 3. Joseph and Benjamin. The Grove of Adonis. Half an hour distant from Jacob's straggling settlement, his tented huts, his stalls, penfolds, and barns, there was a gully filled with myrtle bushes of strong, sturdy growth, a sort of miniature grove, of which the folk of Hebron thought as sacred to Ashtar, or even more to her son, brother, and spouse, Tammuz Adonai. The air within it, though hot in summer, had a pleasant, bitter tang, and the thicket was not impenetrable, but pierced by numerous crooked openings, which one might take for paths. Choosing one at random and making for the lowest part of the glade, one came upon a free space made by grubbing up the bushes. It had a shrine. A four-sided stone pyramid, somewhat above a man's height, with procreation symbols stamped on it, a masiba, itself probably a symbol of procreation, was erected in the middle of the clearing. At its base lay offerings in the shape of clay vessels filled with earth, from which pale greenish sprouts were springing. Also, more complicated artistic efforts, such as wooden laths fastened together in a square and covered with canvas, upon which a clumsy human figure stood out. The women who presented these had drawn the figure with mold upon the linen, sewn it with seed, and trimmed the sprouts to even growth, so that the figure showed in relief against its background. To this spot, Joseph came often with his brother Benjamin, now 8 years old. Benjamin had begun to outgrow the tendance of womenfolk, and liked to try to keep up with his elder brother's pace. He was a chubby-cheeked child, no longer running about naked, but clad in a short-sleeved, knee-length garment of rust-red or dark blue with an embroidered hem. He had beautiful gray eyes, which he would lift to his elders with utter trustfulness, and thick, shining hair, which covered his head like a metal helmet from the middle of his forehead down to the nape of the neck, with bays for the ears. These were small and firm, like his nose and his short-fingered hands, one of which he would slip into his brother's as they walked together. He had a confiding nature. Rachel's friendly spirit was in him. Yet his whole little person was weighed down by a certain melancholy and shyness. He knew that for which, all unbeknownst, he had been responsible, knew the hour and the manner of his mother's death, and the tragic and guiltless guilt which he bore about with him was enhanced by Jacob's bearing toward this son of his. It was not untender, rather it was marked by a painful reserve, the father avoiding instead of seeking his son's gaze. Yet from time to time he would press his youngest born long and fervently to his heart, call him Benoni, and whisper in his ear of Rachel, his mother. Thus, when the little one grew too old to cling to the women's skirts, he could have no natural, unembarrassed intercourse with his father, and hung the more upon his brother, whom he in every way admired. Joseph might be smiled at by all he met, yet in a certain way he stood isolated, and could therefore feel grateful for the small brother's loyalty. He too felt deeply the natural bond, and made of this nearest of kin his friend and intimate, despite the difference in age, to an extent which was almost more of a burden than a pride or happiness to Benjamin. This clever and fascinating Yosef, for so Benoni pronounced it, told him so much that he could not take in. His very eagerness to do so deepened the shadow which lay upon the pathetic little mother-slayer. Hand in hand they left Jacob's olive orchard on the hill, where the sons of the maids were plucking and pressing. These latter had in fact sent Joseph away, after he had gone to Jacob, where he sat in the cattle-yard, with Eliezer standing before him giving account, and reported that the fruit on almost all the trees had been allowed to get too ripe, and would not yield the best oil. Also that, in his opinion, the brothers were using too much violence in crushing them in the mill. Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher had accordingly been reproved, and thereupon, with outstretched arms and mouths open on one side, ordered Joseph to take himself off. Joseph had called Benjamin and said to him, "Come, let us go to our place." On the way he said, "I said on almost all the trees." Well, that was an exaggeration, such as one uses in speaking. I admit that it would have been more exact to say, on some of them. I climbed myself into the old one with three trunks, the one with the wall round it, and plucked the fruit and tossed it into a cloth, whereas the brethren, alas, were using sticks and stones. And with my own eyes I saw that on that tree, at least, the fruit had got too ripe. Of the others I will say nothing. But they behave as though I were simply lying, and as though one could get really fine oil by mangling the precious gifts with stones. Could I look on and not complain?
No, Benjamin answered. Thou knowest better than they, and thou art obliged to go to the Father that he may know too. I am glad thou hast quarrelled with them, little Yosef, for now thou hast called me to come with thee.
And now, my noble Beni, said Joseph, let us take a jump and fly over this little wall. One, two, three.
Yes, responded Benjamin, it is good, but keep fast hold on me. Together it is more fun, and also safer so for my little self.
They ran, jumped, and went on again. Benjamin's hand would get hot and wet as Joseph held it in his own. Then the elder would take it by the wrist and flap it in the air that the breeze might dry it. This so amused the little one that he always laughed until he stumbled and fell. When they came to the myrtle glade and the sacred grove, they had to separate and walk one behind the other in the narrow paths. They took endless pleasure striking about in this labyrinth, finding a winding opening which would permit them to pass for a certain distance where they would stick fast. Or, twisting and turning, uphill and down, they might find a way on, only to issue at last in a cul-de-sac. They fought their way, talking and laughing, shielding their faces from scratches and blows. Joseph, as he went, broke twigs from the bushes, blossoming white with spring, and took a store of them for the wreaths he loved to wear in his hair. Benjamin had wanted to do the same. He had gathered twigs and begged his brother to make a wreath for him, too. But he soon saw that Joseph did not care to have his little brother adorned with myrtle green. He did not say so straight out, but he wanted to keep the decoration for himself. Benoni knew that some kind of idea was behind the reserve. He had seen that Joseph often had such secret thoughts, which he did not confide, especially not to him, the little brother. But Benoni suspected that the jealousy about the myrtle garland had to do with the inherited firstbornship and blessing, which, as everybody knew, was in the father's mind hovering above Joseph's head. "Never mind, little brother," Joseph might say, kissing the other on his cool little helmet of hair. "At home I will make thee a wreath of oak leaves or bright thistles, or a garland of mountain ash with its scarlet pearls. What dost thou say? Is it not far finer? What wouldst thou of the myrtle? It doth not suit thee. One must needs choose the right sort of adornment." Whereto answered Benjamin, "Clearly thou art right. I see it well, Josephia. Yashup, my own Jehoseph, thou art wise above all others, and what thou sayest, that could I never say. But when thou speakest, then I see, and agree so, that thy thoughts become mine, and I am as wise as thou makest me. I see that each must make his choice, and that not all adornments would suit every one. And I see that thou wouldst stop there and leave me as wise as I was before. But wert thou to go on and tell thy brother things more clearly, thou wouldst see I would follow thee. Thou wouldst not be disappointed in thy little brother." Joseph was silent. "So much have I heard people say," Benjamin went on, "that the myrtle meaneth youth and beauty. That is what big people say. If I say it, it maketh us both to laugh, for how could we say that the words fit me? Young I am, indeed, or rather small, not so much young as dwarfish. Young art thou, and lovely, so that the world is full of the report of thy beauty. But I am more a matter for jesting than for wonderment. When I look at my limbs, I see that they come short as respects the rest of me, and I have a fat little paunch, as one who still taketh his mother's milk, and my cheeks puff out as though filled with wind, to say naught of the hair of my head, which is like to a cap of an otter's fell. So then if the myrtle suiteth to youth and beauty, and standeth therefore, then verily it suiteth to thee, and not to me, and it were a fault in me to assume it. I know well that one can err, and do oneself harm in such matters. Seest thou?"
quite of myself, and before thou speakest, I understand much, yet of course not all, and thou must aid my understanding."
"Brave little man," said Joseph, and laid his arm about him. "I love thy otter cap, thy little paunch, and thy chubby cheeks, and thou art my dearest and only true brother and flesh of my flesh, for out of the same abyss came we both, which is called Absu. But for us is Mami, the sweet one, for whom Jacob served. Come, and let us go down to the stone and rest."
"Right gladly," answered Benjamin. "Let us look at the frames and the pots which the women have put there, like to a little garden, and thou shalt explain to me the meaning of the stone, for that I love to hear. Because at least," he went on as they followed the sloping path, "after all, Mami died of me, and half of my name meaneth son of death. At least in that sense might the myrtle become me too, since I have heard folk say that it might also be a tiring of death."
"Yea," said Joseph, "there is lamenting in the world for youth and loveliness, for that Asherah maketh to weep and bringeth to destruction those whom she loveth. That must be why the myrtle is a tree of death, and a garland for the same. Therefore likewise hath it that sharp and bitter smell, as thou canst tell from the twig in thy hand, for it is the adornment of the whole sacrifice, set apart for one set apart, and destined for the predestined. Dedicated youth, that is the name of the whole sacrifice. But the myrtle worn in the hair, that is the herb, touch me not."
"Thou hast taken away thine arm from about me," Benjamin remarked, "and lettest thy little brother walk alone."
"Here is mine arm again," cried Joseph. "Thou art my true and own little brother, and at home I will make thee a wreath of every color of the rainbow, of all the flowers of the field, so that he that seeth thee shall laugh for joy. Shall that be a bargain twixt thee and me?"
"It is sweet and good of thee," said Benjamin.
"Lend me thy coat, that I may kiss the seam of it with my lips." He was thinking, "Plainly it is the inheritance and the blessing he hath in his mind. Yet it moveth me anew and strangely that he maketh reference to the whole sacrifice and to the herb, touch me not. It may be that he thinketh of Isaac when he speaketh of the whole sacrifice and of the one set apart. Certain he meaneth me to understand that myrtle is the sacrificial garland, and that disquieteth my mind." Aloud he said, "When thou speakest as now, thou art doubly beautiful. In my folly I cannot tell whether the scent of the myrtle cometh from thy words or from the trees. But lo, here is the shrine, and the gifts are more than when we were last here. 2 gods in frames and 2 sprouting vessels have been added. There have been women here. They have put little gardens in front of the grotto. I would look at them, but the stone is untouched, not rolled away from the grave. Is now the Lord within, his beauteous form, or whither hath he gone?" He referred to a rocky hollow framed in shrubbery, carved out of the hillside, not high, but as deep as the height of a man, and partially closed with a stone at its mouth. This hollow served the women of Hebron for the ritual of the feast. "Nay," answered Joseph to his brother's question, "the figure is not here, nor is it to be seen throughout the year. It lieth preserved in the temple at Kirjath Arba, and is brought forth only at the feast of the solstice, when the sun beginneth to decline, and the light to go down to the lower world, and the women do with it according to their custom."
"They entomb it there in the cave?" Benjamin inquired.
He had asked thus on the first occasion, and Joseph had instructed him. Since then, he had often pretended forgetfulness, in order to hear the story anew, and have Joseph tell him of Adonai, shepherd and lord, the murdered one, for whom arose lamentation throughout the world. For then he listened, as it were, to the thoughts in between Joseph's words, to the tone and the rhythm of his speech. For he was vaguely possessed by the idea that so he might come upon his brother's secret thoughts, in solution in his words, as salt is in solution in the sea. "Nay, the burying cometh later," answered Joseph, "for first they seek him." He was sitting on the base of the shrine of Ashtaroth,
a rough-hewn pyramid of blackish stone, the surface of which looked as though it were broken out into tiny pustules. Already he was busy weaving the myrtle wreath, and the fine tendons stood out as they moved on the backs of his hands. Benjamin looked at him from the side. Cheeks and chin showed a dusky smoothness. They betrayed that Joseph already shaved. He used a mixture of oil and potash, and a stone knife. But if he were to let his beard grow, what then? It might be that it would have changed him a good deal. Quite possibly he had not as yet much beard, yet even so, what would have become of his beauty, that especial beauty of his 17 years? He might just as well wear a dog's head on his shoulders. The difference could not have been much greater. Certainly we must agree that beauty is a very perishable good. "They seek him," Joseph went on, "for he is noble and he is lost. Some of them have hidden the figure in the shrubbery, but they search with the others. They know where it is, and know it not. They purposely bemuse themselves, and they all lament as they move about in the searching. They lament in chorus and singly, 'Where art thou, O my adored God, my spouse and my son, my bright shepherd bird? I long for thee. What hath befallen thee in the grove, in the green meadow, in the world?'